about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello and welcome to episode 53 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
Fortunately, we've got no Retroid this week, but that's because it's the wedding anniversary, so we're not meant to have Retroid this week. It's all cool.
That's a fair comment.
Yeah.
It's a planned absence.
Yeah, it's a planned absence. Anyway, we've got several bits of news for you this week, ranging from bits to do with multiplayer, because we never talk about that. Yes, we do sometimes. Some Iron Man suggestions. And we're going to sort of end on a discussion about children's films, of all things.
Oh, kids' films.
Well, kids' films, which will probably surprise, maybe appall you. I don't know. But anyway, newsy things. I've never watched the original series of this, so please don't kill me, people, okay? But Blake Seven is probably most certainly going to get maybe some kind of remake, reboot, reimagining from Microsoft, or rather Microsoft, like, you know, contracting a bunch of production studios to create a new version of Blake Seven.
Well, there goes my childhood, another little memory gone again, you bastards. I don't know. I mean, obviously, they're trying to replicate the success of the reboot of Doctor Who, aren't they?
Well, not just that, but Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
I would say that perhaps there's more parallels between the notions behind what they're trying to achieve commercially with Blake Seven and Battlestar Galactica than necessarily Doctor Who.
Well, I wouldn't be so sure, because it's quite a big cult following, just like Doctor Who was.
They've
been trying to make the fans have been trying to get a remake for years and years. In fact, our friends over at Big Finish are now doing Blake Seven audios.
Well, obviously the one thing that I've got to say about this is that Blake Seven is obviously a British sci-fi series, so the Americans doing a British sci-fi series is actually going to be quite interesting. I mean, when it came to Battlestar Galactica, yeah, they updated everything, but they already had kind of the basis there.
They did, it was American.
Yeah.
Let's just cast our mind backs to that fateful year with Paul McGann and the Americanized Doctor Who movie. No.
or just, you know, cast our minds back to that, you know, that pilot for Red Dwarf. Made in America.
Oh, God help us. No,
I'm sorry, have I brought up repressed memories?
But there again, the Red Dwarf one.
Smegups video that I bought, and that's the one thing I hated about it.
With the Red Dwarf one, because it's mostly comedy, you know what Americans like when they try and do our comedy. It just doesn't gel, because our form of comedy, like, say, for example, The Inbetweeners, is self-deprecating. And the Americans don't seem to be able to do that as well as
we do. But you know what? I prefer their version of The Office to ours.
That's true, but that's more because I don't like Ricky Gervais all that much. It's a bit smarmy. A bit too smarmy, I think.
And okay. Steve Carell's quite cool, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do like Steve Carell.
But anyway, Blake Seven. For those of us who are perhaps uneducated as to the subject matter of Blake Seven, could somebody perhaps enlighten?
I didn't watch it all that much. What I remember, though, is Blake Seven was a group of rebels who were basically fighting some big organization. And it was well-renowned. You know, it was quite full of action, full of dodgy sets, just like Doctor Who used to be, with falling over cardboard sets and stuff. And the main character, Blake, I believe he actually died.
No, he
was supposed to have died, and then he came back, didn't he?
Yeah, and he was...
A baddie.
Well, kind of. He turned on his former crew.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That sounds dramatic and potentially a long, depressing TV series. Yeah,
I think it was.
It had its moments. I mean, I can remember, was it Avalon, one of the main characters?
Avon.
Avon, there you go. Avon, that was close. Yeah, I remember him. He was quite. But if I remember right, he became the leader of the crew once Blake left.
Yeah.
But he was quite smarmy and very. What's the word? He protected himself rather than the crew.
He was very self-interested.
He was, yeah. It was like if he was a character, if he was to be a selection in, say, an RPG, it'd be the thief, I would imagine, or the rogue.
I think it's though, is that Avon was very strategic and very intelligent, as you kind of put. But he was, I think once Blake had gone, I think his had meant to have come into his own. I haven't seen that much of Blake Seven, but from what I have seen, he seems like a likable character in the sense that he's he has, you know, set personality, and yeah. You know, he's Avon.
I found him more interesting than the main character Blake.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I might get shot for saying, I suppose, but I did. So there.
I know, I'm pretty sure that some Blake Seven fans would probably agree.
What's interesting for me about this, obviously this is coming on the heels of the announcement that there was going to be a Halo series coming to Xbox One, which has been executive produced by Spielberg. When I say interesting, maybe I find frustrating, is that they seem to be obviously appealing basically to male audiences. It would be nice if they were going to reboot something or remake something or perhaps do some original programming that was of a sci-fi or fantasy-like nature, that maybe just have some female protagonists kind of in their own thing.
Imagine a version of Buck Rogers that was remade and the main character, Buck, was actually a woman.
Yeah, that would work.
I can hear the screaming of the internet right now.
Yeah, as long as they have Tweaky still there, that's all right.
No, I'm just saying that, like, as a person that, though, has previously professed that I will probably not pick up an Xbox One, they're not exactly doing much to convince me of the non-gaming capabilities of the system so far in terms of original content.
There we go. So just for people who might not have seen it, it's a sci-fi set in the future. Age of interstellar travel and follows the exploits of a group of renegades and convicted criminals and their fight against the Terran Federation.
That sounds like a bit like Firefly was really the Blake 7 remake. Oh, is that controversial?
Really.
Oh, Farscape was.
Farscape more so. Farscape more so, because that was the basis of, you know, the kind of escaping from the authority, you know, having no home, being constantly on the run type thing. So I think Farscape is better for that analogy.
Okay.
The other character that sticks out to me as well, there was actually a really cool female character who was a space smuggler and was probably the best pilot of the crew. I'm just looking now. Jenna Stannis was her name. So they did actually have a few female characters in there as well. In fact, I think the main baddie was a female as well. Going for memory.
I hope she wasn't a femme fatale of any kind at any point.
No, I don't think so.
No, I've just realised that I think in between Star Trek Next Generation, Star Trek DS9 and Star Trek Voyager, a woman has occupied every post.
Yep.
If I'm not mistaken, like second officer with Kieran Reese.
Science officer,
yeah, Dax as well.
Dax, yep.
Yeah, obviously medical officer.
And captain.
Captain, Catherine Janeway. Engineer, that was Bolana Torres.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, just random thought.
I'm just saying, babe, that in terms of having as a pivotal plot around a female character, it doesn't tend to have. And when I say pivotal plot, I mean as in she's not some kind of damsel. She's the one that is having to take
save
action,
people.
Which isn't necessarily to save people, but she's taking action. She's an active participant in the club.
Kicking ass.
Well, fate is in her hands rather than his.
Yeah.
And not necessarily having to form, you know, romantic relationships.
She's making her story rather than history.
I can feel someone getting punched in a minute.
I think it was kind of bad that I actually meant that as it was. I wasn't being ironic or anything. I think you guys took it as ironic.
Okay, I'm gonna move us on to probably the next bit of genderized debate, for the evening. Just because it's interesting to an extent. Last week was announced that Call of Duty Ghosts will have multiplayer with female skins for the first time in the series.
Yay!
Yay! About time.
I read about this on Hex last week. And yeah, it was an interesting announcement. If you consider the fact that I haven't played a Call of Duty game since 4, i.e. the first Modern Warfare, and that was mostly because the plot was, for me, better. I felt things were better narratively than the subsequent sequels. Things made a bit more sense in general in that game. The idea of having female skins is maybe pushing me to at least wanting to try out the multiplayer.
Mm. It's going to make a nice, interesting addition to it as well. See how they do it.
I think one of the worrying things about it is whether players who actually don the female skin
will get targeted. Yeah, get extra forms of abuse.
Yeah. Which, you know, obviously I'm not sort of like saying, no, leave women out of it because, you know, whatever. But, yeah, there's going to be a problem, and hopefully, you know, there's going to be people out there playing as women kicking these guys out. Yeah.
Hopefully there will be an effective mute option.
To be fair, there's plenty already on there that do kick ass quite nicely and normally shoot me to a million pieces of guts and spillage all over the arena, unfortunately, on Call of Duty. So it's about time they actually got a female character in there.
And can I just say that I am really, really hoping that they don't gimp the Wii U version.
Yeah.
Please, for the love of anything, just don't gimp the Wii U version. So many developers have been doing it lately.
Or just delaying releases.
Yeah.
You know, because they're like, oh, now we'll re-release this thing that with the Wii U features that we've added onto the existing systems as well.
It would have been nice to have seen would be nice also to see a female character in the actual main campaign.
Yeah, which is something that I mentioned in my piece on Hex, because it was just like, oh, okay, so we're set in the future of a world where basically the US has been taking down a lot of pegs and is essentially relying on ragtag crews to defend its borders and interests. And it's like, well, in that situation, it's entirely plausible that you would have to rely on female combatants in order to help deal with this situation, you know, because women do get trained up in various military roles.
Yeah.
So the idea that they wouldn't finally be allowed onto the front lines is just ridiculous. I'm not saying make the game about women. I'm saying, because obviously, you know, Call of Duty, you know, you tend to switch characters in the main story, but, you know, you could have one instance where you're playing as a lady.
Yeah, it wouldn't even be so bad if there was just, like, a woman on your squad. Fingers crossed, not having to be saved every 5 minutes, but
or having to deal with any form of sexual assault in order to show that she's vulnerable yet strong at the same time.
Yeah, let's just, you know, take out that. Basically, just replace one of the characters that are already there with a female character and have the storyline exactly the same.
Yeah. Do a Ripley or something.
Yeah, that works. But also in multiplayer, let us play as the dog.
Yes.
That would be awesome. With rocket launches strapped to its side. Bless it.
Would the basically, because obviously there's the one hit melee kill with the, you know, knife. Would the dog version be just going for the balls?
Or just tear its neck out, yeah.
Obviously that wouldn't work for a balls option wouldn't work for the female skins, one would hope. Yeah. Unless, of course, they can't be bothered to do that degree of variation encoding.
Tear its throat out.
Yeah, that's
you can jump up to the top of the sort of crane, jump down, rah, and just rip the throat out. There you go. Jobs are good.
Okay, now I've just got this image of a dog trying to climb a ladder.
It's a precarious process for the deer dog, and it doesn't know how it's going to get back down again if it doesn't get to jump. So, you know.
You'll just have to wait. It'll be sneaky dog, ninja dog. Sneaky ninja dog.
But no, I was actually quite disappointed when the Wii U version of Blacklist, Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell Blacklist.
Oh, yeah.
You know, how there's co-op, and it seems that the Wii U version won't have basically offline co-op.
Why?
It's like, why? I don't get that. I mean, the system is pretty much designed for it. You know, two separate screens and all.
Yeah.
But no, they just decide to gimp it.
Ugh.
And then they wonder why the Wii U isn't selling.
It's a very odd entity at the moment, isn't it?
It is.
People, neither side is willing to take risks. Well, I say neither side. There's three, four sides of Xbox. You've got Nintendo not perhaps taking the risks it could with some of the money it's got stockpiled from, like, the success of the Wii and 3DS.
Mm.
And because it's got money it could invest effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got, obviously, third-party developers not wanting to take the risk because stuff's not selling well. And then you've got consumers who aren't buying because there's not stuff to play.
Yeah.
And so that's the three sides. Is there a fourth side? Well, I suppose games journalists don't always help.
Oh, a lot of the time they don't.
But, you know.
No offence to you guys or anything, but you just, no.
You're not counting yourself as one after your first video for Hexo Engine was about video games.
Yeah, it was about the Wii U.
Anyway, but I just like the idea of the fact that with Call of Duty Ghosts, I could play with as a woman. That's nice. I mean, it was really nice, for instance, when I played NHL 12 like 2 years ago now, and I could play as a woman on that for the first time. It made the experience just a lot more interesting, especially going through like career mode.
Mm. But of course, there is one problem, which is basically you had incredibly limited design options.
Yeah.
And bearing in mind that there is a story behind why that actually came around, if you remember.
Yeah, that's true. If in case you don't know, a teenager sort of wrote to me again, you know, well, was there no female hockey players on your games for NHL? You know, even though girls play ice hockey, and yeah, they were like, oh, okay.
Oh,
and they put her in the game, but they also put in like this standard adult option as well. But so it was a woman, and she only had like two. No, was it just one woman with two hair options, or was it just the one woman and the look like the teenager? So unlike where you had like a huge array of customizable male features. Mm. You had like two options as a female player. I'm not sure if they improved on things during last year's game, but they are at least certainly continuing to have female player options in this year's game.
It does make me wonder whether, well, because presumably other games, like say, for example, you know, some of the epic ones like Skyrim or Mass Effect, they obviously have the ability to kind of completely customize, you know, kind of facial features and whatnot. Why don't they sell you know, basically the code for that to other companies?
Oh, no, I don't think it's just a case of selling the code. It's just whether or not there's will to implement it. It's just, it's like, oh, we've got to do a bunch of face models or options for a whole another gender, you know. Dang. So much work. You know, ignoring half of the world's population. So much work. So much
actually,
effort.
Technically, isn't it just over half?
Depends which part of the world, but in a lot of it, yes. There are more women than men. Though obviously not in places like China. I don't believe that's quite the case, unfortunately.
Well, no, due to social engineering.
anyway, that's a bit off topic. I'm going to take us on to our next... Okay, this is another bit of Games
Age,
but
Mass
it's the last bit of Games Age. And yes, speaking of Mass Effect, we're more Dragon's Age 2, actually. The rumour mill went into overload last week when Metro, which is a UK paper with a widely read website, put out the story that a BioWare writer was leaving the studio due to fan abuse. She had previously received abuse from fans as a result of changes that happened to Dragon Age 2's combat system, which were incorrectly associated with her. I mean, she was a writer, she didn't have anything to do with it. She just happened to say at one point, oh, she finds the fighting quite boring and stuff, and people automatically assumed it was her fault that the combat system of Dragon Age 2 changed a lot from the combat system of Dragon Age Origins, which wasn't the case. And that Metro basically took like a piece of an interview that I believe might have originally appeared on Polygon or somewhere like that, and just kind of completely sort of misquoted it, just kind of put it completely out of context and said, oh no, she's leaving due to abuse. She's not leaving due to abuse. She's leaving because she's going off to write a novel.
Oh, best of luck to her.
Yeah, the abuse is something that's happened, but the reason she's leaving BioWare, at least for the time being, is because she's going to go write a book.
Just as a matter of interest, what presumably if she was writing a novel, was she like part of the story team?
Yeah, she was a writer for Dragon Age 2. Yeah. And it's just like, yeah, you know.
I really cannot fathom why people just abuse.
The whole sort of
this way
trolling situation, it just seems like, if I mean, because we've had the thing with like Phil Fish recently, and that wasn't even necessarily from fans. Well, it was a combination of fans and some games journalist, you could call them, and he's like, yeah, he's got, I'm not, yeah, Fez 2 is not happening, I'm leaving games, bye, sort of thing that's happened. And then there's a lot of people lately who seem to be getting the short end of the stick when they happen to express certain opinions or do certain things which are inconsequential in the greater scheme of things.
Yeah.
Because it's not a matter of life or death or anything. No, no. But the consequences of the abuse that they subsequently endure actually could be a matter of life or death, depending on how serious some of the threats are, and can actually affect the career. So it does affect absolutely the ability to put food on the table and similar. I mean, was it the case recently of, I'm trying to think, because obviously we had Phil Fish recently, and there was another, there's been loads of instances recently where stuff's happened in games, either a journalist has said something or a developer's done something, and then a small yet very, very vocal group has just completely overboard in the reaction to what was said or done. Oh, that was the thing, I'm not sure who developed, oh, was it Black Ops 2 recently? Had a change made to several of the guns.
Right. Okay.
It was like a minuscule stat change in this update. Basically made the game made these particular guns fairer, and then the personal people responsible for this, when this was found out by a small select group of the community, were absolutely
ballistic.
Yeah, ballistic, and with death threats and all this.
I mean, how sad you have to be to actually threaten death for something like that.
It's getting out of hand, isn't it?
How sad you have to be to threaten death. Full stop, to be fair.
But, and at the same time, it's general, just kind of like the issue of trolling on the internet in general.
There's kind of trolling as in having a laugh at somebody else's expense, kind of bit of
and
joking.
Then there's just general,
and then there's abuse. Like, abuse, bullying, and,
it is just another form of bullying at the end of the day. Which is just...
But the thing is that the people committing this type of bullying are not necessarily the same kind of people who would bully somebody in public, in person.
No.
Which is the strange thing about it all, really, when you think about it. Is...
It's like a switch goes on when they're on a computer for some reason.
Yeah.
It's that whole kind of barrier thing. It's why road rage is so bad. It's because, there's this barrier between people that allows you to basically just lash out.
At the same time, though, bullying is generally an attention-seeking behaviour. Mm. And with the amount of media coverage that this kind of online behaviour is getting at the moment, I unfortunately suspect it is causing a form of negative feedback.
Yeah, it will do.
It's just causing more... and more of it to happen, because people like these people are hoping to just seek attention.
Yeah.
And it's currently the whole idea of don't feed the trolls.
Yeah.
Is perhaps becoming a bit true. I mean, it is unpleasant to think that you need to ignore them, but I think the worst thing you can do is trying to respond to them. The better thing to do is just, if you do receive some, because a lot of the stuff that's been said, it does break laws.
Yeah.
It's only in the UK it breaks laws. If somebody was to be that abusive online, it will break various laws that do exist. So you could report them to police. So the best thing to do is just not to respond, and just get the police involved.
Yeah. I reckon websites should have like a troll meter, like how fat are the trolls at the moment, just from feeding.
It's like, yeah.
It's like something like YouTube having, you know, a troll meter, like, oh yeah, the trolls are out today, probably best to just not say anything.
Oh no, we could have,
do
like,
not enter this room.
Like in like Monster Hunter 3, and there's like the forecasts for what monsters would be out on the plains, and it's like, no, it's a troll's forecast for the day in the upper highlands of Destructoid. We have this degree of trollage today. Down here on Eurogamer is looking calm. The mods are in. Over here on IGN, it's looking a bit dicey tomorrow. There's an article, unfortunately, from Keza McDonald going up, and it's going to cause a huge bloody uproar because she's providing some kind of opinion that unfortunately doesn't gel well with a bunch of very insecure, misogynistic under 20-year-olds.
And down here at 4chan, well, big as ever.
Meanwhile, over here on Reddit, midweek, it's looking a little dicey, and R-gaming, tiny bit dicey. Perhaps don't go in there without an umbrella. The slobbering will be ferocious.
So if you're driving out on the information superhighway today, probably best to avoid those areas.
Indeed. There's your forecast of the week. Or something to that effect.
Yes, I mean, exactly.
That,
yeah.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. Just get some kind of algorithm just predicting when. So do you be a combination of sort of like sentiment analysis from a commenter point of view and the language used in either features and reviews or videos, and then just combining that with just previous existing responses to those kind of sentiments and this material, and then kind of go, well, if we put this article out on today, this is the kind of response we're going to get. And just kind of like warning the slightly saner members of the populace, kind of just don't read below the end of the article. There is just stop scrolling. You've read the article. Just step away from it now. Tweet it if you want. Like it on Facebook, whatever. But do not read below the end line. It is a dangerous place to go to. It will not make you happy. Just go. Leave.
If you read past this sentence, you're going to have a bad time.
Exactly. But, you know, I've
done that one to death now.
I think we have. At the same time, though, it would be great if somebody would do a video with just kind of like a board or a projector, a projection on a wall, and just kind of somebody dressed up like a weatherman or lady, and just kind of doing the forecast.
Maybe we'll have to do that with X sometime.
That would be good. Ooh, yeah,
that'd be cool.
Okay. Last bit of news for this week. Obviously, we've previously talked about that Robert Downey Jr. has pretty much said he's not going to do anything after Avengers Age of Ultron in terms of playing Iron Man or, you know, Tony Stark. Unless, of course, that's not for definite. It's not like he hasn't been as strong on the point as, say, Christian Bale talking about being Batman again. You know, there's still a slight chance if the conditions are right, and probably the money's right, obviously. Meanwhile, though, Mark Wahlberg has said that he'd like to take over the Iron Man role from Robert Downey Jr. for an Iron Man 4.
Can I just say, before we get into the story any further, what I would like to see with Iron Man 4 is Robert Downey Jr. playing Tony Stark right up until he gets into the Iron Man suit, and then as he's coming out, comes out as Mark Wahlberg. And she'd be like, what?
Just to confuse people.
Step in as one actor, step out as another.
He can't regenerate, that's just not on.
This is not Doctor Who. This is
There's only one person who can regenerate, thank you very much.
Unless, of course, they just come up with some extremely new version storyline of Extremis, and they're just like, not
Ultimate
only...
Iron Man.
Yeah, it's like, not only does it give you stupid, funky powers, it also completely changes your appearance.
Well, cool. It's either that, or he acts... He basically gives his address to another terrorist, and then has to change his face this time.
Yeah.
Or they'll just do what they used to do in Home Away Neighbours and just change the actress and hope he didn't notice.
Remember that. That used to really annoy me. It's like, who's that guy? Why is he talking with this person as familiar as he is? Oh, what? It's she just called? Ah, they did it again. How am I meant to follow the story? Come on.
That's Jim Robinson. But he was 56 when he was on there before.
That's
being played by a 12-year-old girl.
I just want to read the quote from the Yahoo Movies interview.
Yahoo!
That kind of basically has shown Mark's true designs upon the Iron Man role. He said, "I would like to take over from the Iron Man franchise for Robert Downey," admitted Mark about his superhero lungs. "But it's one of those things where I kind of like playing real people. So I've never been asked... Once I was kind of being talked about for the Robin role in Batman Forever." He laughed about the Joel Schumacher franchise that culminated in the worst movie ever, Batman and Robin. "Somebody dodged a bullet!" Exclamation mark.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Those bloody nipple suits will haunt me forever. Good God.
You know, I really like, as I previously said, I kind of got a bit of a soft spot for Batman Forever, but it is purely based on the performances by Tommy Lee Jones and Jim Carrey.
Batman Forever was all right. That was not a bad film. It was Batman and Robin with Arnold Schwarzenegger. "Can you feel the freeze tonight?" Oh, fuck off.
To be honest, the inclusion of, is it Alicia Silverstone?
Yeah, it was Batgirl.
As Batgirl was also really weak. I'm not saying that they shouldn't have had Batgirl.
Was it Alicia Silverstone or was it Brittany Murphy?
No, it was Alicia Silverstone.
Okay, because I keep on getting those two. Didn't they both, wasn't
playing
it Alicia
Clueless?
Yes.
That's where the confusion stems from. But yeah, it's just I really like me Robert Downey Jr. You know.
To be fair, I am starting to get into Mark Wahlberg a bit as well.
To be fair, I mean, if he's on about real people, like he only plays real people. What's his next movie?
I can't remember at the moment.
Transformers 4.
Well, there we go. Yeah, this giant robot, man in an iron suit. Giant robot, man in an iron suit. The lines are blurring.
They are indeed. I mean, I can't really... I think Mark Wahlberg would be suitable for a superhero film, but I think it'd be a tough call to take on Robert Downey's role as Iron Man, personally.
It's a bit like, well, the situation with Batman at the moment. It's really hard to imagine anyone else in the role at this time.
It always is with the Doctor as well, to be fair. It's like anything. Yeah. When you're so used to somebody playing a role and then somebody else comes along, it's just really
that's true.
Bizarre.
The other thing is that, as far as I can tell, Dan Junior brought a lot of himself to the role.
Yeah.
Tony Stark especially. If you sort of compare how he is in, like, starting from obviously the first Iron Man film to one of his previous roles after his career began to come back on track.
Say, for example, Sherlock Holmes.
It wasn't that. I'm thinking earlier than that. The way he acts is very similar to the film he was in with Val Kilmer.
Oh, that one. I can't remember what it was, but...
You could search it.
Oh,
please. We're just going to look on IMDb a moment. But, yeah, he's brought a lot of himself to it, like the mannerisms and stuff. Yeah, that clicky thing he does with his hands as he's like trying
kiss,
to work.
Kiss, bang, bang.
Yeah, kiss, kiss, bang, bang. If you look at how he plays his role in that film, admittedly it's like a really neurotic writer, but it's actually really, there's a lot of similarities between that and how he is in Iron Man. Though then again, the writer for Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang, I believe is the same as the writer for Iron Man. If you check, I believe this might be the case. I'm sorry, we may have got faster internet and we might be taking full advantage of this.
Going
back to Mark Wahlberg, I think he wouldn't do a bad Iron Man, I don't think, but I think he would actually be more suited to a character like War Machine, personally.
Yeah.
Or even, throwing it out there, he'd actually possibly make a very good Batman as well. with his physique and stuff.
Just click on the writer and see what else he's done. Let's do it.
Writer
or director, one or t'other. They've got links of Iron Man themselves.
Actually, I take it all back. The perfect character for Mark Wahlberg to be, get rid of Ryan Reynolds and put him as Green Lantern. I think he'd probably do that quite well.
Do you think he'd make a good Hal Jordan?
Iron Man 3.
No, Shane Black worked on other Iron Man.
Yeah. Oh, now you've started something. I mean, or The Flash.
Oh, no.
Or The Flash, yes. Oh, yeah, that was the thing. I mean, because obviously we've got, that's it, Flash TV series has been looked into at the moment.
What?
Oh, no, there's a bit of news we failed to cover in previous weeks.
Just number 3, I'm afraid.
Oh.
Whoa.
Sorry.
The Flash TV series?
A Flash TV series. Or was it a Flash film? Or was it both?
I thought they were going to possibly do a Flash film to bring it into Justice League of America, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Or Justice League, should I say?
I don't know
this
why.
This is where it's coming. This is where it's going with Batman versus Superman. You know that's where it's going. You're going to have Batman versus Superman, and then all of a sudden it'll be Justice League. You can't deny it.
The Avengers have got a head start on them. Quite a big head start.
I think by the time DC and Warner get going with any form of Justice League films, I suspect that the whole Avengers idea will be sleeping for a while as Disney waiting for the inevitable revitalization to start an entire new rebooted series of films.
Well, I'm not entirely sure about that, but I know well that they're probably going to keep on going for a couple more years, at least with the two or three films out of the Marvel Universe, as it were. And then they're probably going to be like, you know what, this isn't making as much money as it did at the beginning. Let's not do quite so much.
I'm going to yet again state that I'm slightly in mixed minds about the continuation having so many comic book movies around at the moment, just because it's all superhero comic book movies. You know, I could do with a few more Road to Perditions and 30 Days of Night kind of deals.
Basically, smaller graphic novels that aren't necessarily hero-based.
Yeah.
Or superhero.
Yeah, which we have talked about previously many episodes ago. That
did indeed.
So, yeah, I like Iron Man. I like Batman. Didn't like Superman so much. I've liked most of the Avengers films, but it's getting to the point where it's just kind of like, was this all more of the same?
Yeah, it's like having steak every night. After a while, you just fancy, you know, something else instead. Maybe that's just me.
No,
totally agree there. Yeah. To be fair, it would be nice to see a bit of a change.
Emily did a steak the other night. Ah, oh, so lovely.
Do you know what's...
I'm sorry for any vegetarian listeners out there.
Sorry. Oh, but that was another thing that, well, not a superhero. It's Top Cow are looking into making a darkness film at the moment as well.
Ooh.
Obviously, he's not a superhero. He's an anti-hero as ever they come. But
an anti-superhero.
Yeah.
That's powers.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
And obviously there's the whole sort of like attempt to make a new Crow film as well.
No, going on.
I'm sorry.
No.
They could almost do Dark Justice League.
Well, yes, which is what that's what gives it Del Toro's rumoured to be working on.
With Swamp Thing in that, isn't it?
Yeah, and Constantine and Zatanna. Yeah. And of course it's probably going to be new 52 style Constantine, which means that he has none of the crippingly horrific past that the original Constantine has, so he's just really just a bit of a...
Can I just ask, in the comics of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, do they start out as a team, or is there kind of individual stories that kind of become...
I can't tell you.
Because I think...
The volume I read, they did actually... They were sort of the part where they got pulled together as a team like they did in the movie.
Right, it's just that I found it a bit weird how, you know, it's kind of the first movie, in essence, and there were all of these big, big characters, each with their own very, very unique backstories, you know, that would be enjoyable to, you know, kind of watch or listen to. And they're kind of stuffed inside, you know, one big film. Well, not even that big, but, you know, one film. So it's a bit, So in a way, I kind of prefer the, you know, having each character having their own unique story and then afterwards being, you know, fused together with other characters that have their own unique story.
It's nice when that happens.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically, okay, maybe I could eventually handle the idea of somebody like Mark Wahlberg taking over Iron Man. Maybe I could handle this.
Possibly, but I think he'd be more suited to other superheroes.
Yeah, but then as I've gone on to say, I am beginning to tire of comic movies. I will go and see the new Thor when it comes out later this year.
That actually looks really good.
You can't really call them superheroes, but I saw Kick-Ass 2 last week. We've got a review coming out hopefully this week on Hex for that.
Oh, yes.
But it's just...
It's flooding the market at the moment. That's the problem.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's a really expensive way to make films that are not necessarily narratively that strong. It's because so much of the money is spent on marketing and obviously special effects. So you keep hearing tales, obviously, of poor special effects companies not being paid properly for the work they've done.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of like, they're not all Michael Bay, but everyone seems to have taken a leaf out of Bay Explosions 101.
Oh yeah, definitely.
As a model of filmmaking, and it's just
you don't need to blow
everywhere.
Up cities in order to create a sense of impending doom.
I would like a superhero film where there's people with powers, and stuff doesn't get blown up.
Yeah,
give me that. Because that would be unique at the moment, where something doesn't explode.
It does make me wonder, if you calculated the supposed death toll for each of the kind of battles in superhero films, and then put them all together, how much of the population would be dead right now?
Well, I believe that they have probably, between them, certainly killed the entirety of New York by now. New York City, unfortunately. Obviously that seems to be one of the main battleground settings as well, repeatedly.
But, no, it reminded me of that one statistic about Left 4 Dead that came out the one time. It's like a couple of years back now, but basically the amount of zombies killed, totaling all of the players that have played it and whatnot, would have killed the population 6 times over or something like that, which I found quite interesting.
Alright, I'm gonna move us on to our five pieces. So we said we were going to talk about kids' films.
Yay!
Basically, it's the summer holidays. I've been hearing constantly from my parents about them taking my little brother to see this and that. Planes is the subject of tomorrow's cinema visit.
For them,
not for us, thankfully.
That looks so cool.
Really?
Yeah, it's Pixar.
Pixar are now 2/3 of the way towards a Planes, Trains and Automobiles movie.
Yes!
Anyway, we were going to talk about kids' films from past and present, basically.
Well, mine are definitely from the past.
And when we say kids' films, we're probably talking about films from... It's a wide age group, and it's kind of covering teens. So we're looking at 3 to kind of about 15 years, and just kind of like the films that are targeted at this age group, basically. Paul and I did some research last night. We watched 2 more, slightly more sort of like tweeny to teen orientated films, just in preparation, just mostly because when we see kids films, it does tend to be the animations of Pixar and DreamWorks, etc.
I did some research as well.
Okay, well, who wants to go first?
Who wants to present their findings?
Who wants to present their findings first?
I didn't get any findings. I just enjoyed watching some good old-fashioned TV shows.
Okay, well, I'm trying to think. What was my favourite film as a kid? That would be a good place to start. I only liked Disney up to a certain point. Once I got over animated Disney, because I got fed up of the musical elements of it.
Yeah, the musical element. Oh.
I mean, I have a love-hate relationship now with musicals. I'm very picky about which musicals I like.
Same.
And the probably what ended up being one of my favorite kids' films was Flight of the Navigator.
Yeah, that
Never.
was a cool film.
You know.
Well, I don't particularly like it.
That's the one with the boy in the ship with the little
Yeah.
ball device. Well, little alien that comes out that looks like he's on a little sticky ball sort of thing.
I think I didn't like the one bit in the storyline where he kind of comes back and it's like years and years and years later. And it's just like, hey, he hasn't aged and, you know, his parents miss him and all that. And I was like, no. Time displacement,
I actually
no.
liked the drama. I liked being slightly on edge during that part of the film.
You adrenaline junkie, you.
Oh yeah, totally. I can't remember what was the last animation. I mean, because that was the thing. I grew out of Disney quite quickly. Just because I found the female characters so insipid. I was a feminist back then, darn it. I kind of liked. I don't know. Was there any female characters I liked in the end? Once, what before I started secondary school, in Disney films,
Belle?
not
Did you
really.
like Mulan?
And Mulan was just kind of a bit too like. Everybody, somehow my family ended up assuming that I really liked Pocahontas, so I ended up with a whole load of Pocahontas themed things. I think I had a breakfast bowl, I had a cup, I had a bin, I had a necklace at one point, and obviously the tape. I'm not sure how this happened
You know what it probably was?
exactly.
They misinterpreted when he was like, yay. And I was like, oh, she actually likes Pocahontas. Let's give her stuff.
I wonder if it actually had somehow some continuing lingering effect, though, because later on my degree, I ended up doing a dissertation on the literature of Sherman Alexie, who's a contemporary Indian writer. I say Indian because he prefers to be called Indian rather than Native American.
Fair enough. I still remember that one Christmas, basically because when I was younger, I used to like Power Rangers. You know, I
Yeah.
used to be in the age group, you know, like Power Rangers and whatnot. So when I got a little bit older, and well, I'll say a little bit older, you know, kind of very early teens, and my parents actually got me some like Power Ranger figures, and I didn't realize it at the time, but you know, I kind of jokingly last present was like, oh, I hope this isn't Power Rangers. Their faces dropped. I opened it and it's like,
Oh,
just felt so embarrassed and ashamed.
we watched inadvertently two Power
Yes,
Rangers films of the
I
week.
was, well, I just, well, not
You
even
tried
just
to
one,
blank it
but.
out.
Yeah, I was not paying attention at all. I remember when I was a kid going to see the first one at the cinema. That I think that was probably one of my first cinema trips. Going to see that, and you know.
My first cinema trip was probably for The Little Mermaid. Second one, I think, was for Beauty and the Beast, and I fell asleep during that.
Really?
Yep, I fell asleep during the Beauty and the Beast.
No.
You know, I managed to see it on video eventually, some years later. But yeah.
There are some, you know, Disney, like even the cartoon Disney films that I do actually quite like Emperor's New Groove, and
Oh, that was
for some
special.
reason, Hercules a bit. I think maybe it's
Hercules was cool.
James Wood
I
is it Woods
liked
or Wood?
it was James Woods.
James Woods as Hades.
I really liked Atlantis.
I don't think I ever got
You
to see
guys
the
must have
first one.
liked Lion King, surely.
Never actually watched it. Not all the way through, anyway.
I was put through a phase with my cousins where it was like we saw it at the cinema and then somebody got it on tape and then we watched it a lot and people assumed that we liked it because we didn't have that many videos. So, and I got given a Simba cuddly toy for Christmas, which was sourced from a London Disney store because this was before Plymouth had a Disney store for one Christmas. So I got a Simba cuddly toy and it's kicking about somewhere in a box now. but it was like one of the must-have presents that year.
You guys have really made me feel old by telling me what your first cinema experience was.
Sorry.
That's quite alright.
I think I have mentioned this many moons ago on the podcast, but the one time I had to live at my grandparents for a month, or certainly several weeks, when I was about 5 or 6, it was before my middle brother was born, because the chimney in the house needed to be redone in some way. Like, it hadn't been done properly when the house was built.
Well, the brickwork.
The brickwork had to be redone. Like, the entire thing had to be rebuilt, and the chimney went through my bedroom. So I had to stay at grandparents for several weeks whilst this work was done. Anyway, in order to pacify me, because he was about the only person, they were the only people in the family that had a VHS at the time, I was bought The Little Mermaid on tape and All Dogs Go to Heaven.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one.
Yeah, which is like one of the most depressing films you can ever watch as a kid.
Beyond
like American Tail and The Land Before Time.
Nope. The most depressing animation you can watch as a kid, Watership Down.
Okay, that's
true.
I was a happy kid
because I never used to like the sad films.
I liked Watership Down, I just didn't watch it much.
Okay, somebody else tell me their favourite kids film.
To put this into perspective, then, my first cinema experience was Return of the Jedi.
Okay, that sounds fantastic, though. Actually,
yeah,
to see that in cinema.
It was very good. I must admit, I was only 4 or 5 at the time.
I think I remember my dad saying about one member of the family who was like really, really young at the time, and I think it was it Return of the Jedi. Or The Empire Strikes Back. Third one in the original trilogy.
Yep.
And someone was scared of the Ewoks.
Uh-huh. I used to love them.
Putting complete boo-hah over Thingy's theory and How I Met Your Mother. Neil Patrick Harris's character in How I Met Your Mother has a theory about if you were under 10 when Return of the Jedi came out, then you really like Ewoks. You find them cute. They remind you of teddy bears and stuff. And if you were over the age of 10 when Return of the Jedi came out, then you don't like Jedis. You just think they're stupid and childish and horrible.
Oh, bless.
I think my most favourite modern kids film is actually probably something like Brave or The Incredibles. I do like those. We've got it on Blu-ray. Well, both of them.
Brave is good.
They also have the advantage of not having, like, singing.
Yes. Really? And Pixar doesn't usually. Anyway,
yeah.
So. No.
Which is lovely. Because I can't deal with it. They got those musical montages in the sense of this, you know, some kind of tune playing. And there's a montage of stuff happening. But people don't sing. Or inanimate objects don't sing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm cool with that. I'm down with that.
Mine would... There again, saying that, I do like the first two Toy Story films.
Yes.
To a certain extent.
Meanwhile, so to Cookie, was Return of the Jedi, though, your favourite film as a kid? Or was there another?
I was very big into Star Wars, to be fair, but the other one, which I did go to see at the cinema, was a double bill, which I still have on DVD to this day, was Transformers the movie, the original 80s cartoon.
That to be fair is actually quite cool. Just basically the soundtrack and, you know.
Oh yes, line. Yeah. And Stan Bush, I think his name was. He did sung Dare. 80s power rock. Oh, it's great. So it's not so great when you get woken up by your neighbours though, because you've downed half a bottle of whiskey with a friend and you've actually woken them up by reenacting the whole film as you're watching it. Oops.
Is that a public apology there?
Nah, they probably don't even listen to this, so that's not a problem. I just think it was quite a cool time until they knocked on the door. I was like, oh, bugger. Were we really that loud?
So you said Oops. Double bill, so Transformers.
We saw that and Labyrinth.
I do remember Labyrinth. I haven't seen it in literally like probably a decade, probably more.
No, I still like probably that two, as well, actually. To be fair.
Possibly two.
Somebody had it playing at their like fifth or sixth birthday party. It was weird. Didn't know what the hell was going on. Found it really confusing. Because it was like been put on in between playing Pi games. So it was just, just confusing.
It never works when you have like a film in the background, because either everybody's watching it or nobody is.
You just lose track of it, don't you?
Yeah. But another one, Princess Bride.
I did not see that.
No, to be fair, I did not see that either. But I can see how it's, really good.
That was,
Okay, Paul, the Paul beside me, Paul. What was your favourite film as a kid?
What was my favourite film as a kid? I did like Ghostbusters. My favourite was the second Ghostbusters film.
Isn't there that whole thing where that got nicked once?
Yeah, I think it was in the tape recorder when we got burgled one time, and apparently I was distraught.
Okay, I think we're gonna.
I did also like Dumbo.
That's a sad film as well.
That is, but
yeah, but all Disney films are like that. At some point, somebody always dies.
That's true.
In every Disney film.
So, certainly the older ones, yeah.
But they're Snow never. White. They're never on the same degree of carnage as George R. R. Martin. If George R. R. Martin did Disney, imagine.
It's a circle of death.
Oh dear, Mickey will be fornicating with the broomsticks in Fantasia.
Oh jeez, that was something we had on tape. I never understood why that got bought on tape.
I was always bored during Fantasia because I was never into music when I was a kid. I always kind of accepted that it was an art form. You know, it made you feel like different things and whatnot. But I was just like. For visual stimulus to audio stimulus. So I was quite bored during Fantasia because Mickey Mouse was like only a tiny bit of it, and it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Hippos, what the hell?
I'm gonna bring us up to contemporary film. So you may have detected earlier my disdain for the idea that Planes is a film. This is because I wasn't that impressed with Cars. Oh, I was even less impressed with Cars 2.
Cars 2 wasn't as good, but Cars was good.
No, I
Luke Wilson. Is it? No. It's not Luke Wilson. It's Thingy Wilson. Owen Wilson. That's the one. I do like Owen Wilson as an actor and whatnot, but I just felt it was. I felt like Cars as a concept was a bit limited.
I have issues with films about inanimate objects being given personalities, and just about deal with the idea of animals being given personalities. It's
well, to be fair, animals do have different personalities. But
it's that's why. Guess what, people? I don't like the Toy Story films that much, and I really hate 3.
What?
Yeah, that's the truth of it all.
A tear rolled down my cheek in 3. And they got left at the nursery, the bastards.
Which cheek?
Left.
Wow. Right answer.
I don't like films about inanimate objects much. I don't like the Toy Story films that much. I don't like the Cars films. Don't like I hope I don't have to see Planes.
I think
Monsters Inc.
I think
that's fine because it's about things that in theory if they did
they're actual
exist,
creatures rather than
That was a good film.
I can understand why to a certain extent, because when you're dealing with inanimate objects that have no innate personality of themselves, you end up having them stereotyped.
Yeah.
Say, for example, in Transformers 2, when, the two characters that were...
Oh, those two tiny sort of Fiat-sized freaking cars.
Yeah.
Twins. Oh, yeah. Oh, those.
You didn't have that in the original 80s movie.
And to a certain extent, with Lumiere, the chandelier in Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, that's probably why I wasn't that impressed with Beauty and the Beast, just as the over-reliance and talking household objects. Yes, of course, they turned out to be people in the end. At the same time, though, I didn't.
I thought Chip was quite cool.
Oh man.
I'm gonna bring the
age of the films. Let's get out of Disney for a minute. Well, I say get out of Disney for a minute. I want to talk about one. We did some research for this site. Last night we watched Sky High, which is a Disney film.
Oh, I watched that the other week.
Yeah, and
that was a bloody waste of 2 hours.
Yeah, and we watched I Am Number 4, which is a bit more recent.
Oh,
mm.
I quite got into that.
Yeah, well, Sky High first, though. That
no.
Was...
No.
That was...
Move on!
That...
Move!
You had to be to enjoy the film.
Oh, it was an appalling film. You could see where things were going far too easily. It was... Oh, what's the name of that TV series that used to be on with the... Like, they... had the dude in the blue and white suit and the moustache.
Yes, Lazy Town or
Was it Lazy Town?
Oh God, yeah, Lazy Town. Yep, yeah. Move on.
It reminded me of that in terms of kind of like the
cheese.
Sets, the cheese, and the sets a bit, and the superhero costumes especially.
Yeah,
and the manner of the bad guys in it, and it. I mean, it was a PG rated film over here.
I was quite surprised with the amount of notable actors like Kurt Russell, Bruce Campbell. Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Yeah.
It's just like, what are you doing?
Not much.
Slow month, obviously, when filming took place. It was just really cheesy. It was just kind of like, oh, we're gonna do a Disneyfied take on the superhero genre that's not The Incredibles. I mean, basically, let's think about it. The Incredibles came out before this film. That was the standard under the Disney label that had been set for the superhero genre. And then you had Sky High. And
yeah,
it was like, did you not listen to or watch what Pixar did, you corner of the live action side of Disney's production crew? Did you not observe this at all?
Now that Disney owned Marvel, they could actually do something with certain Marvel characters.
They could, or they could just not remake Sky High because it was a stupid concept. Anyway, it was a stupid. Apart from the way it sort of dealt with high school relationships being quite ridiculous, and just kind of like, oh, let's just put the cliques in for the sake of having cliques. Let's just have the cliques, more cliques. It was the fact that it was like, oh, we're going to teach you about being superheroes. And they clearly had not thought through what really needed to be on the curriculum of being a superhero or a superhero sidekick, which was like, oh, we're going to teach you how to use powers and make cool things and assist. And it's like, right, are you going to teach them like politics and history so that they don't go and help people who may then try to either kill them or sue them, or capture them, or misuse them.
I think one of the things that kind of annoyed me about the film in general was that it felt like it tried to be a superhero version of Harry Potter and didn't even succeed at that.
No, it didn't. It failed horribly at that.
Because, obviously with each Harry Potter film, there's a storyline within each film. There's an overarching storyline of the progression. There's the characters that actually get into mischief, have to deal with, certain, problems and whatnot. Whereas this, it felt like it was basically taking the tropes from, kind of high school based films and whatnot, and basically just doing them in a superhero setting. So, say for example, the school bullies that happen in every single kid's film.
Oh yeah, that's a trope. That's just
yeah, and the the best friend that's secretly in love with them, and they get spurned for the evil bitch of the school.
Yeah, and the bullies thing's interesting though, because whenever they have a representation of bullies, it takes the kid a while to be in a situation to deal with them, whereas in real life they either it rarely takes time, but the kid's either going to go running to an authority figure, or they, after having whatever done to them, or they'll have something done to them and they'll beat the crap out of the bully, or they won't have anything done to them and the bully's like goes too far and then gets the beat shit kicked out of them. It's like, they never show the kids retaliating properly at the time the offence is committed.
Yeah.
It takes time for it to build up.
Yeah, or almost like a posthumous, revenge.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah. But that, beyond the bullies thing, what was crazy was that, okay, so that film was clearly aimed at probably like 8 to maybe 11, 12 year olds.
Yep.
Move on to the second film we watched last night, and that was I Am Number 4. Now that was more kind of like 11 to 14 year olds.
But still included bullies and, you know, the whole, oh, I'm in this, newspaper, you know, kind of photography club, therefore I'm worthy of being bullied, and, oh, the new kid has to stick up for, you know, the bullied guy.
So basically it had like at least the social structures that, and this was made by a completely different production company as well, and published by or distributed by a completely different company than Sky High. I Am Number 4 and Sky High had so many similarities in terms of the tropes being used. It was boring and tired, and it may sound like I'm trying to say that, oh, it's only films since I've not been a kid that have been like this, but if you look back at older films, the whole bullying story, I mean, friggin' Never Ending Story.
Oh, that was a classic.
But the bullying stereotype is there.
Yeah. And there's always two kids.
Yep.
To outnumber.
Mm.
You know, and it's even like, I remember Power Rangers, and there used to be like these two bullies, one fat one skinny one.
Bonk and Skull.
Exactly. And kind of similar thing with Sky High. That was like a, you know, slightly bulkier one and the skinny one.
Yeah.
It's,
What American filmmakers are trying to tell us is that Laurel and Hardy were actually bullies. It has transcended the decades of cinema.
Good God.
Forevermore, it will continue to transcend the decades of cinema.
I mean, to be fair, even Happy Gilmore. Not Happy Gilmore, sorry. Billy Madison.
Yes.
Adam Sandler film. I know that's, you know, obviously not necessarily a kid's film. Because
it's very much like a kid's film.
Yeah, there's lots of drinking and, you know, sexual innuendo and that type of thing. But when he goes through school, he always encounters the Doyles, which is basically a family of bullies. And I know you get, you know, a family of bullies, you know, kind of thing in real life. But it is a tired cliche. And I think...
Back to the Future, you had Biff.
Yeah, exactly.
Moving away from, so if we move away, because obviously we could go on forever about the bullies trope. Another trope: authority figures that don't believe.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I've only encountered a few instances in my own life where authority figures, when I was a kid, didn't believe me about something, and the main time this happened, it was at their own peril, and they were affected by ignoring my advice. There was a carbon monoxide poisoning incident which I could have averted had my warning been listened to. But anyway, it's just like, oh, we have seen something. Oh, you will be immediately disbelieved. It's like, no, kids are believed about things they see, you know. Yeah. If they can talk about it rationally and stuff, which happens with a lot of them. At the same time, it's believable when kids are really overly excited and they try to explain something fantastical that's happened to them, and they're disbelieved by the authority figures involved. But when they try to talk about it calmly and rationally and they're still disbelieved, it's just like, what? No, wait, that's not how it works in real life. And then it just kind of perpetrates this kind of myth that, oh, authority figures don't listen to kids. Yeah. Because they're kids.
Yeah, I remember feeling as a kid that I was basically, I think, you know, the phrase, kids should be
seen
and not heard.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like that. Like, my voice didn't matter, but I should always be seen at all times. Just to make sure I'm not in enemy mischief or anything. But my voice didn't matter. And that's a horrible way to live, to be honest.
Yeah.
I feel like I've detracted from I Am Number 4 a bit. Oh, yeah. Obviously, though, and that was the thing, because, I mean, okay, so we perhaps in theory we watched two subgenre films yesterday that were essentially people with powers. And there was just the whole thing, and obviously the powers were in, which happens to anyone in a film with powers, so essentially almost like a superhero film, really. There's the points of awakening and all that. But in the kids' films, more so, when the power happens, when they finally, the protagonist gets their ability, it's embarrassing for them.
Yeah.
It doesn't go well. It's not like when Spider-Man finally realizes he can climb walls, it's not that embarrassing for him. There's maybe a jokey moment where a bit of slapstick happens, but generally he doesn't feel disgusting and scared immediately for the fact that he's discovered his abilities. He feels pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You know, but in comparison, like there's this scene in I Am Number 4, and the guy's in class, and suddenly his hands start glowing. He's like, oh my god, and obviously there's the element of, oh, he could be discovered because of what he is, but it's more the fact that the way they portray it, it's like he's had an erection in the middle of class.
Yeah, and kind of a similar or like inverted thing with Sky High as well, where he's embarrassed that at first he's got no powers, that he hasn't come of age yet, he hasn't hit, you know, kind of superhero puberty, as it were. And it's not until kind of partway through the film that he does.
And this idea of, oh, you haven't come of age yet, it's often portrayed as a really negative thing in a lot of kids' films. Like, oh, you haven't grown up enough yet. That's bad. That's awful. And yet at the same time, we're praying that, our kids don't grow up quickly. We don't want them to grow up quickly. And yet we're giving them films where they're showing that they need to grow up quickly or else horrible things will happen. You've got to grow up quickly. You need to do it now. The world needs you to grow up now because you can't save it unless you grow up now. You have to stop being a kid and suddenly mature here now.
Yeah, which is kind of ironic considering, you know, society's push to actually keep kids as kids. And it's like, oh, no, you know, young people should be, under... I don't know, say 15, they should be, you know, going out and playing and getting into trouble and all these different things.
But not growing up.
Yeah, but not growing up.
It's, you know. And it's
like in, not to spoil it too much, but in like Kick-Ass with Hit Girl, and, you know, she's in Kick-Ass 2, it's kind of described that she had her childhood taken away from her because she's Hit Girl. And, you know, she's gone through all this training and, you know, kind of has all these, like, social problems because she hasn't had to deal with them and whatnot. And, yeah, it's kind of this concept of taking away somebody's childhood, which is kind of mind-boggling considering childhood is an invention that was probably, what, 1900s?
No, yeah. It was, well, the childhood kind of came in with French educationalists like, was it Rousseau? Something like that. Well, if basically people who started with the rise of the middle classes, the idea of childhood evolved. Prior to that, childhood didn't really exist except for the very rich, or obviously royalty, essentially.
So yeah, there weren't, you know, kids that were out, you know, playing around and, you know, doing all these other things. They were basically miniature adults.
Yeah, and they were treated as such.
Yeah.
Well,
to a certain extent, I mean, treated in kind of a not very nice way, to be honest.
No. I would like to think that the idea of childhood is a good thing, but then it's just the hypocritical nature currently of, we want kids essentially under the age of 16 to behave like kids, but we keep presenting them with media where there
it forces them to grow up.
Yeah, and it's just like, well, you can't
have it both ways.
Yeah, you can't have it both ways. It's just,
you cannot have your teenage cake.
At the same time, I wouldn't want to have a whole series of kids' films that's just all happy, smiley, and tries to behave like they're completely ignorant of the facts of life.
See, what, the return of the Care Bears?
I do not want the return of the Care Bears. No. I'm still trying to, as I've said previously, still trying to cope with the resurgence of My Little Pony and the subcultures this has created.
Yeah, I'm completely dumb.
Because, you know, I used to play with My Little Pony, so it's a really weird thing to encounter. It's just,
we actually had to go to the cinema to watch My Little Pony, the movie, with my sister.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
You can't see my face right now, but
There's disbelief and surprise.
Yeah. Surprise.
I got my own back though, because you went and saw Action Force the movie, or G.I. Joe as they know it in the States. With the appearance of Sergeant Slaughter.
Oh, I'm just trying to think of just some more appalling examples of kid films at the moment. Do you, has anyone else noticed how it's perhaps more recognisable in kids' films than film stars, but you tend to get studios within the same year will release, two of them will tend to release similar films. The adult situation, the most recent example I can think of is Paul Blart, Mall Cop, and The Observer Report coming out within the same year.
You've always had that. I mean, like Ants and...
what I'm trying to say is it's more noticeable with the kids' films. So Ants, Bug's Life, Shark Tale, and Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
Which is getting a sequel.
Yes, Finding Dory.
And it's just like... I suppose Finding Nemo is one of those films that, thanks to my littlest brother, I've seen far more times than is healthy.
Mine.
The crab is like the coolest thing in the entire film. that's it. That's the film. It's just that crab. But it's annoying because it's just like, oh, let's do a sequel where, you know, it's just like, really? I mean, it was like Monsters University. Not only have they done a prequel, but they've decided to mess with the canon of the first film, which says that Sully and Mike had known each other since they were kids. They didn't meet at uni. And then it's like, oh no, we met at uni. And it's just like, well, so that's another thing. Okay, sequels to kids' films can be quite dubious in returning.
Yes.
In quality.
I mean, how many Aladdin films has there been?
There was a scary amount of Aladdin films. There was, Lilo and Stitch had a surprising number of sequels, considering I saw the original at the cinema.
They went through this phase, though, didn't they? Suddenly doing straight-to-video sort of sequels.
Yeah.
I think they've grown out of that a bit now.
Yeah, they have.
But it was an alarming period. It was just like, obviously because they wouldn't bring on the original voice actors normally, so they'd have people doing impressions of the original voices, which is really weird.
Yeah.
And the quality of the animation tended to steeply degrade as well between sequences, and the quality of writing would also degrade quite steeply.
I think it's because now we've actually kind of got used to it, and I think they're probably building into the contracts that, oh, if we call you up for a second or third or fourth film, you've got to do it.
Yeah.
They didn't used to do that before, so the actors could actually hold the studio to ransom pretty much by saying, okay, well, we had this much for doing the first film. Now that's proven to be popular, I want double.
I just want to talk about one last series of more recent films that's annoyed me. It's live action. The Spy Kids films.
Yeah.
I really don't like this one. I've never been the target market for Spy Kids films because I've been too old since they were launched. However, as someone who's had to watch it in the vicinity of a younger sibling, it's just kind of like, why? Their plot is replaced with gadgets.
Yep.
And it's just like,
technically,
why?
It would make less sense as an entire concept than something like Harry Potter or Sky High. Because, I mean, at least Harry Potter, you know, you're kind of teaching the magic, not just, you know, the magic, but, you know, kind of how to defend yourself from magic and that kind of thing. With Sky High, obviously, it's developing your powers, you know, making sure that you can control them. With Spy Kids, it's like, you're a spy, go out, do this. Hold on, you're sending a kid out to do that. Why?
Yeah. Where the feds are not involved. You know.
What happens if what happens if a bad guy comes along and tortures the kid?
Do you know what? What really should have happened in Spy Kids is somebody called up Child Services. and then depending on where the parents were held, obviously if they were still in the United States, the situation would have been dealt with by the FBI. If they had unfortunately been captured in a foreign territory, it would have become a combination of CIA and probably Navy SEALs or something.
I mean, at least the Alex Rider film.
Yeah.
That he was more like 15, 16, wasn't he?
Well, 14.
14. So you can kind of see why, you know, they'd want him to do that.
For those who don't know which film for to Stormbreaker.
Yeah.
Okay.
That makes more sense than Spy Kids.
Yeah, because they're, are a lot younger. And that's one of the things, like, when you have kids that are meant to be under the age of 10, like, sort of 8 or 9, as in a role as a film, and they're, like, really aware of themselves, like, more so than a kid really would be of that age, and it, as a kid, that actually annoyed me. I'm just like, you wouldn't know this stuff.
And just the sheer amount of cheese, like the, you know, quips that, you know, that people think, people writing it think that they're funny, you know, because it's a kid saying this, and the kids are just like...
That's the thing, actually. A lot of humour in kids' films tends to be lost on kids.
What was that story that my parents went to take my... one of my nieces to the cinema to see Ice Age. Ice Age 3, I think it was. And, you know, obviously there's kind of more parents there with their kids and whatnot. And the adults were actually laughing at jokes. And the kids were just like, what? I don't get it. Why is that funny?
Yeah. Anyway, I think that really is all we've got time for this week. I'm going to have to wrap this up because we could rant on about this for ages.
Yeah, but can we just kind of come up with, you know, basically, because we've just done
slagging.
Just basically slagging off kids' films. Perhaps we should actually, you know, try and put things right. What would we do if we were writing a kids' film?
I wouldn't dumb things down.
Don't treat kids as idiots.
At the same time, obviously, though, it wouldn't be this whole hypocritical nature of, oh, you've got to grow up. I would ask the kids to do things that are genuinely expected of kids of the age, you know, being portrayed. And at the same time, you know what? Kids actually tend to like reading and watching stuff of kids that are older than them.
Yes,
so you don't necessarily need to portray kids of their age. But then again, obviously, don't go excessively like, oh, right, well, we've got a bunch of elementary kids, so we should have a film set in high school. You don't need to do that, you know, just have them a little bit older.
Yeah, maybe 2 or 3 years maximum.
And also don't just put obligatory relationship crap in.
Yes.
Most of them couldn't give a damn that one of the characters fancies one of the other characters.
Yeah, this whole love story kind of thing.
It's a subplot that's not needed for films for, like, the under 14s.
Yeah, and what is it with younger guys going with older girls?
Apparently that's socially acceptable, I suppose.
But it's completely the reverse in reality because, you know, you have the older guys going out with the younger girls because the younger girls fancies the guy because, you know...
Unless it's a US thing.
Yeah, it might be a US thing.
In the
UK, it's the other way around, so that the guys are actually... Well, the old guy is going out with the younger girl.
I think it's a tricky thing, but yeah, basically it would be.
Especially as Nina's like 6 years older than me.
Oh, okay.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and don't have excessive amounts of MacGuffins to help the characters do things. So actually, give them the skills and the knowledge to do things that they've earned as well.
Can I just say that the villains, they have to have a reason for being.
A villain.
They are.
Yeah.
It's established quite, you know, routinely in adult films. The bad guys are the way they are because they want this, or they see the hero as the problem, or they want to fix the world in some way. Half the time in, you know, kids' films, you don't have that motivation. I think that would really help.
Or they show it really late when they should have shown it really much earlier on.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think the perfect example for that really is Harry Potter.
Could you explain further?
Well, you find out about Voldemort relatively early, considering it's when it's book 2 that you start seeing a little bit more about him.
Mm.
And you find out a little bit more of him in the first one. You've got the friendships there that are designed for life. You've got the whole school working quite nicely well. I just like how it all fits together.
Yeah, I could get behind that. Anyway, that's all we've got time for this week. So it's goodbye from...
It's goodnight from me, Paul, a.k.a. one_cookie on Twitter. You can also find me at the Hex Dimension and thegamejar.com.
It's goodnight from me, Paul Blewett. I have a website, paul-blewett.com, and I'm on Twitter as Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm EK6891 on Twitter. You can also maybe trance onto, you know, drowningandmultimedia.co.uk. There's stuff on there. You can find Nerds over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter at NerdsPodcast. Plus, we're on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. And don't forget to check out hexdimension.com, because we got some sweet stuff on there for you. And the video that is definitely up on there now for 25 action films you should see. That is all. Good night.
Night. Bow, weed, guana, weed, mini bomb.